This one's for Stone. What's up, everybody? This is Schmitty with another episode of Talking Schmidt. Today on the program, we have the one and only Keith Meek, triple OG from Saratoga, I believe. It's going to be good. Listen up. Might even be 3 hours. Who knows how long we're going to talk, but it's going to be a long one, and there's going to be a lot of NorCal history and history in general. I got some stuff to say. First and foremost, congratulations, Alyssa Steamer. You have finally landed on the cover of Thrasher magazine. So stoked for you. I know that's always been something you wanted, and now you can check it off the list.
Hi, this is Keith Meek, and I'm listening to Talkin' Schmidt.
Hey,
Talkin' Schmidt.
I'm already not watching.
It's cool, like tonight is the night.
Damn, this is like the coolest thing I'm ever gonna do.
I wouldn't say it was fun.
What do you mean? Well, Christian Fletcher's younger brother.
Fuck the Dodgers.
Oh, big dog's in. What do you think, Dolan?
John? Schmidt?
Talkin' Schmidt.
Alpha Macaroni.
Most of these guys, their opinion don't matter.
Talkin' Schmidt, right?
It's skateboarding.
I remember that.
Talkin' Schmidt.
What are Yuns doing?
Holy shit.
Skateboarding homies.
No, Schmidt, you can't jump in.
What is happening?
I'm here for
Gregory.
Yes, we are.
Wi-Fi check one, Wi-Fi check two.
All right. Hello, everybody. I'm a little nervous, a little giddy, and I'm super stoked. Today, we got an OG that started skating before Thrasher magazine. I think before there was even Derby. This is Keith Meek from Santa Cruz.
The NorCal legend.
Thanks for taking the time and being on the show.
Thanks for hitting me up, dude. I'm honored. Like, I love your podcast. It's fucking, it's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, you do a good job.
One of the most mind-blowing shows I've seen to this day.
When did you start skateboarding?
Like 73, 74. Like when I started skating, I was in Southside, South San Jose.
Oh, okay. Like Saratoga,
my
right?
My family moved to Santa Cruz in 1979.
Oh, okay.
Right in the heart of Winchester was kind of happening, you know. I got dragged away to the land of no coping.
Hey, what do you know?
What drew you to it? Like, in that era, was it popular? Like, how did you start skateboarding?
You know, I was in seventh grade, and I totally remember this. Like, it seemed like it happened in one day. Everyone had a skateboard at my school, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? Like, that's sick. Skateboards. I know what those are. Like, and someone, well, I want one of those, you know? And like, so I fucking had to piece one together because I didn't have money. And I think my friends were buying, like, I think you could go to Kmart or something and get like a hang 10 with Chicago trucks and Cadillac wheels for like $34. But dude, that was like $1,000 to me, you know?
Yeah.
But I somehow pieced together some trucks and some wheels and some decks, and I kept modifying it. Like, I'd update, like someone would give me an old deck and I'd get a better deck, you know. And it was back when, you know, loose ball bearings, just nightmare, dude. You'd be skating down the sidewalk and all of a sudden you'd just be all, and your bearings be rolling down the sidewalk and after you ate shit, you know, and you just have to go find them.
Because they weren't cased, right?
No case. It was just loose.
Uh-huh. Was there other wheels? Because I always hear Cadillac wheels. Like, everybody in that era seemed like they rode Cadillac wheels. Was there other wheels?
Yeah, that was like this shit was moving fast, you know? Like, but for a second there, Cadillac wheels were the shit, you know? But then I ended up buying like some Stoker wheels. They're getting bigger. And that was cool. Like, oh, I got the bigger wheels, you know? And I remember I got some Stoker wheels. I was all fucking stoked. But yeah, that was a nightmare though, the loose ball bearings. And then I got my first set of Road Riders, and that just changed everything.
And that's when living a dream began right there.
I mean, I'd see guys in the mag, you know, T.A., Jay Adams, all those guys, Greg Weaver, and they all were riding Road Riders. And it's just like, what? I got to get a set of those. I didn't even know they were like from right around the corner, you know? And then like, so as soon as I got those, I was stoked, man. You just slide them on there. You didn't have to worry about your bearings falling out. And they were way smoother and faster. changed the game. So we were just scrounging around, finding ditches and bowls and going down hills and doing the nose wheelie handstand thing, you know, all that slalom. And we used to go like take the bus to Las Gatas and we'd go downhilling. And I hate downhilling. I hate shit so bad. I was just over it like day one, you know. But we used to take the bus, like me and Ray Stevens. He was like my original skate partner.
Did Ray live by you or was Mike Fox live by you? One of those guys, right?
All of them. Yeah, we had our own little crew. But Ray lived like behind me, like two doors down. So I could walk on the fence, like to get jump into his backyard and shit, you know?
Yeah.
And he had a little pond that we'd skate.
Oh, sick.
Dude, it was like maybe 3 feet deep with like brick coping.
Right.
Little kidney. And it was tiny, dude. It was fucking like wall to wall was probably 6 feet or something, you know? And we'd session the thing. So, we'd put ramps, we'd get plywood and we'd set them up on the electrical boxes. We could make them steeper, you know? We'd be like, oh yeah, make it steep. Yeah, Yugas. Uh-huh. We'd like name the spots, you know, for the steepness of it.
So Yuvis was going, right?
Yeah, Yuvis, I think, is the first legitimate skate spot I skated. Because, like, there was, when I first started, there was a skate shop called Skateboard City in Campbell.
Oh, okay.
Mike Fox worked there and Scott Odewall and, like, Matt Etheridge and those dudes hung out there.
Uh-huh.
Know them yet. But I'd go there and they had ramps in the back parking lot. Like little angle ramps, but they had like four or five of them. So that was like a skate spot. So we'd go there and skate. And I remember Scott Odewalt, like I was riding the steep one and he's all, hey, you like that steep ramp? And I'm all, yeah, man, it's cool. And he's like, you ever been to Yuvis? I'm all, no, what's that? You know? And that's how I found out about Yuvis. And wow, so okay. I looked on a map, Yuvis Dam, figured it out, got a ride out there. One of the older dudes had a car. Pull up at Yuvis and do full blown session.
No
like
way.
People used to session it. Like there's like 15 dudes there riding, you know, and like you go there now and it's just crickets. But it's like it was on. Like that was a skate spot. And then I went there and then you start meeting other people. The skaters are so cool. They're interested. Like where are you from? Where do you skate? You know. And then Blackheart's name popped up. Like you seen Blackheart skate here? And you just thought, who's that? He's all, dude, he drops in at the top and you're just like, fuck, no way, you know? And so I started hearing like, okay, KT's name, Blackheart's name. You start to hear these names and you don't know what they look like, nothing. Never seen photos of them. There's no videos. You can't film shit.
Right.
So like Yuvis was one of the first spots. And then Kennedy Bowl was another one in Los Gatos.
Okay.
You drive like 2.5 mile walk up the hill. Like I remember the first time I went there, this guy Kirby took me and Ray. We went to Gremick. He's like, you guys want to skate a bowl? And we're all, fuck yeah. And so we skated there and then walked up the hill 2.5 miles, I think. And like there's skaters coming down the hill that were skating. So you're all, whoa, this is like gonna be legit. Like we get up there, full blown session up there, cement bowl in this front yard of this house. Like a reservoir.
Was it an abandoned house or something?
No, there's like this girl lived there, or people lived there, but they just didn't care. There's probably like 15 dudes there when we showed up.
Damn.
And this dude's doing nose wheelies around the top, right? And I'm like, whoa, that's sick. And I didn't know, but like years later, I figured out it was fucking Matt Etheridge.
No way. That's amazing.
Dude, everything is all interconnected. It's pretty sick. Like the timing and how everything worked out.
Right. And so as you're meeting those guys, because I know that you guys were both doing music too, eventually, like what kind of stuff are you listening to in the 70s? Like,
those days before, like
as you're starting to skate, what's the music that's getting you hyped?
I'm listening to like, dude, I was born and bred on Sabbath. My older brother is really into music. And so I was just following his lead and he was getting his music from his best friend's brother that was like a senior in high school. We were like, I was in like third grade or something. So okay. We were listening to Sabbath stuff right when those albums were coming out, you know, oh, new Sabbath album's coming out. Like right, just raw, dude. It was sick. And so I listened to Sabbath and AC/DC and fucking all kinds of that shit. Nugent, Queen.
Standard rock stuff.
Rock and roll, but like, I like the heavier stuff, you know?
Okay.
And like Mike Fox and Howard Quebec actually turned me on to punk rock.
Okay, that's where I was going to ask.
Late 77, 78. And Howard like had this fucking huge collection already. So I borrow albums from Howard, like, you know, The Damned's first album, Sex Pistols, Ramones, Buzzcocks, like Dickies, like just a lot of that stuff. I just fucking gave all my fucking rock and roll records to my brother. I'm like, hey, you can have these. I don't even want these touching my punk, you know?
It's weird, right? Like looking back, and I'm later, I'm like in the 80s, mid 80s, but same thing happened with me was when we started skating, it was just like, we don't know what the fuck's going on. We're trying to figure it out, but we're stoked and we're building ramps and wood, like these, you know, just crap. In high school, somebody shows up and goes, dude, you got to go to the Varsity with me and see these punk bands that are playing there. And I went to one show and it just changed my life almost like the same way skateboarding changed your life. Like it was a feeling that it's hard to describe really, but it just felt like this is what I belong in and this is my people. And it was kind of crossing over where skaters were at the punk shows and skaters were becoming punk and just individualism and all that stuff really started to become more clear trying to figure out what you're going to do. And I feel like that was just like, we got to go do that. Like when we saw, I want to say it was the Faction and Suicidal Tendencies. It was the first show I saw at the Varsity. And I remember just going like, dude, I need, like we started going every week to shows and like we'd go up to the farm and do all this other stuff. I guess what I'm trying to get at is what's your version of that? Because you're like 10 years earlier into punk probably, right? Or like 79 or something?
Late 77, 78, 79. Like my first show, Mike Fox took me to my first show. He took me to the Ramones in Berkeley. I think it was 77.
That rules.
I think it was 77, but I didn't even know who the Ramones were. And Mike was like, Mike did a lot for me. Like Mike took me under his wing. He took me to so many skate spots, pools, and like he did a lot for me. And Howard, like those guys, like I owe a lot to them. But Mike, like, I remember, dude, he came to my house and he had to ask my mom, hey, can we take Keith to see some music up in Berkeley? And she's all, what are you guys going to go see? And my mom was super cool. And he's all the Ramones. And she's all, oh, man, that sounds like a band from like when I was in high school, you know? Like, and so she was always cool to like, I could do like, she let me go to LA trips with Mike and shit. But so we went and that was the first. That was it, dude. I saw the Ramones and I was already listening to Howard's records a little bit.
Okay.
But that was the first show. And then,
do you remember the venue?
It was like at some place that would have shows, like a convention center or something. Like, I can't remember though. And then I started going to shows at the Temple Beautiful.
Hmm.
So that was the church where James Jones had his congregation.
Right.
And then they turned it into a punk venue. And so I saw Buzzcocks there, Dead Kennedys, Middle Class, Mutants, bunch of bands, like, and that was probably 78, early 79, major venue for shows.
Oh,
like, huge shows. Like you'd see like five insane bands. Like you'd see like Black Flag, Adolescence, freaking Minutemen, you know, whoever, fucking Delude, fucking so many fucking bands in one night. We were at a show and we came out. And we walked around the corner. I was with this girl and I looked up and I saw the fucking the temple. And I was like, holy shit, it's right here. It was all closed down and fenced off and shit. But those were early shows.
Wow, dude. That must have been like,
but you know that, like, who really has the fucking history on all the San Francisco scene in the 70s, the late 70s would be like, you know, you should get like talk to Mike Fox and like Chris and Anthony Fisher from A Lot of Flex and Tony and Tommy Guerrero, you know, those dudes were into it early. And those dudes, you know, they grew up born and raised in the city. So they're surrounded by it. Like,
Yeah, no, I've talked to Tommy a few times about things, and it's cool to pick. I guess like Henry Rollins came over to his house one day, and really? The band was practicing in his basement or something, and his mom was drinking tea with Henry Rollins. Like, yeah. So weird.
They lived downstairs, I think it was below their uncle's house or something. So it was like to get to their house, you'd go through the garage, and then there was the door from the garage, and they had like a little apartment down there, studio.
Right.
Tommy and Tony had a little room, and then you'd come out of that room, go in the garage, and then you'd go up these little stairs to go into like where the living room and kitchen was in his mom's room. And that's where like Revenge and all that went down, Jerry's Kids.
And Free Beer?
Free Beer. They're still living there when Free Beer was going on.
So how did you meet Tony and Tommy? Like, was it through punk or through skating?
Through skating.
You knew them early.
Dude, the first time I saw Tommy, I was at a contest, and it was in 74, I think.
Jesus.
In Aptos. I still have the flyers. It was just like a flat parking lot, and they had a one angled ramp, and it was just full blown like freestyling. But it was like a big contest. The Sims team was there, the Tunnel team, a lot of flex. Like there's major players, Santa Cruz team. So there's dudes in the mat. Waldo Autry was there, you know, like Greg Ayers, like Steve Monahan, Sims dude jumping off the van, like that style stuff. I saw this little fucking dude with a beanie on and greasy fucking hair, this little fucking dude. And I'm like, looking, I'm all, fuck, what's up with this guy? He looks rad. He spins off like 8 360s. And I'm just like, whoa, what the fuck? And it was fucking Tommy.
Ding.
Tiny. Dude, he had to be like 8 or 9 years old or something.
Oh, my God.
Like, a lot of people don't know, like, Tommy, dude, he's been ripping since fucking deep.
Uh-huh.
Like way before his Pal stint and all that. Like,
yeah, he was on Madrid before Pal, right?
Right, yeah.
And he was skating vert and stuff. Like, there's photos of him doing, like, slaw bears and...
Yeah, that was even later. Like, we'd skate the parks together. Like, we'd go to Milpitas or Winchester or Campbell, like, because the South Bay was holding. Like, all the good spots were in the South Bay.
Uh-huh.
And those dudes would come down, you know, and then the East Bay dudes would come down. It was kind of like everyone would congregate at the parks. And that's how I got to know, like, Tommy and Tony pretty well. And I remember they came down with Bryce at Winchester, and I jumped in their car and fucking jammed up and spent the night at Bryce's. And we all hung at Bryce's house and snuck beers and shit, you know, like Grom status. And that was right when the punk rock thing was just getting ready to start. We listened to Avengers in Bryce's bedroom. And like, so I've known those guys a long time. Me and Tony were pretty close. He'd come down, stay at my mom's house. I'd go up there, stay at their house. It's pretty cool.
Were you kind of, as you're starting to get like connected with these guys and know more about skating and people and checking out the magazines and stuff, and I know you surf too. Were you surfing at that time yet?
I started surfing like around 1980.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, so, right around that time when the punk thing started happening is when I started surfing, which was horrible timing.
Right.
I just moved to Santa Cruz in 79. I'm learning how to surf and I'm a punk. So I'm just fucking hated. You know, you're standing out in the water, like just everything's against you. Like, don't know how to surf yet. They hate punk in Santa Cruz. You know, like the whole, just moved there. Like,
right.
I had some dues to pay.
Damn. Did you see Derby being made then? You were skating before Derby, right?
Yeah, but I didn't skate Derby until I moved to Santa Cruz.
Oh, okay.
It already existed, which was weird because I remember going on a trip with me and Bob DeNike and Cheeto and Scott Foss, maybe. We went over and we heard there was a pipe on the west side of Santa Cruz. They were building something, and it was a silo that was on its side. And we saw it, and now it's part of the Marine Lab or whatever. But Derby's right there, and fuck, we didn't even know it was there.
Okay.
So we drove all the way over there. We didn't even skate because the thing, we couldn't get in. It was like there was security or something. And Derby's like a block away. Like, we drove right by Derby. We didn't even know it was there. So I didn't know Derby was there until I moved to Santa Cruz.
And that other park that I never got to skate, I think it was in SoCal, like it had some bumps and stuff.
Oh, SoCal was like a legit skate park. And it was built in 77, I think, 76, early. It was a real skate park. It had half pipe. It had a receiver run, a mogul bowl. But it was really bad. It was kinked. And by the time it was finished, it was out of date.
Oh, really?
Like ripping dudes skated it, you know, like. Kevin Reed, that was his park.
Did Roskopf live there for a minute?
Yeah, but so they demoed the park, but they left the beginner bowl.
So
the beginner bowl was there, and this guy Brett Bly lived up there, and then John Insko moved in, and then Roskopf ended up living there. So we had like our private little skate park. But it was funny too, because like Tony Roberts and Chris Heinen and those dudes were like super loked out fucking SC guys, right? They ripped at surfing. They fucking been skating forever, but they were younger. And Brett moves into the apartment and he starts laying down all these rules. You can't skate here. And those dudes are like, dude, this is our skate park. You just moved in here. And so those, we would sneak in when Brett was there. Or we'd wait till Brett wasn't there. But then it all got cool after a while. But at first, like they were butting heads. It was classic, dude.
I cut my teeth at Derby.
Those were good times. You had parties there, like bands would play and shit. Blast played there at the park. And
oh, sick.
Because it was like Brett's backyard, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Tommy. In the 80s, a lot of dudes were coming down and skating it. Like, you probably see tons of photos and footage.
Yeah, there was footage of, like, snake, like, you know, a bunch of people just kind of following each other through there. Like, early footage.
A mellow bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Was like it had like flat walls, you know, with rounded tranny and rounded tops, and then there was like a steep section that kind of had a little bit of a corner that would like go like it went. It was probably about 6 foot high, but it had rounded lips, and it was steep enough where you could do airs and inverts and shit on it, and so you could just fly around this mellow bowl with like 4 foot walls, and then you have this steep thing you could hit.
Okay.
It was fucking pretty cool.
Was there like a hip? Yeah.
There's a hip. Yeah. There's a hip on the mellow part.
Okay.
But it was kind of hard to launch off. It wasn't steep, you know? Ollie wasn't perfected yet.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Yes, this is Hansi Driscoll, and you're listening to Talking Schmidt.
Okay, and we're back.
Do you remember the first time you loaded up the car with some bros and went on like a road trip for skateboarding?
Dude, I was like a feral kid, dude. I was all over the fucking place.
Oh, really?
Fucking floor. Yeah, dude. I was like, my mom got divorced from my dad when I was 5, and she never remarried. So it was just like, we were like wild. I was spending the night at everyone's house. Like, dude, we were going on skate trips all the time to Modesto, everywhere, Sacramento. But like, I remember this one time, it might have been the first time there's like this skate club, right? In the South San Jose. And it was kind of like, whatever. And then we heard they're like doing a trip to Anaheim, Concrete Wave. And so we're all, oh, fuck, we got to sign up for this lame skate club so we can go on the trip. And it was sick. It was me and my friend, Chris Morin and Alan Mercer and Mike Fox, Howard Kvek and Mark Odewalt. And we get on this bus. Fucking late night, 11 o'clock, you know, and then they drive all night. You got to bring your own lunch and shit. It's like a school bus, and we drive all night. We get to the park in the morning, and then we skate all day, eat your lunch, whatever. But like, Mike's like, dude, let's fucking bail. Let's go find the fruit bowl. It's like this pool that's been in like Skateboarder Magazine, fucking legendary sessions there, like the Dogtown Boys and everything. But so we get on the bus system. We're all, okay, we had to sneak out of there because you can't, you know, they're like watching you or whatever, like babysitting you pretty much. So we sneak out of the park and we're all, well, where are we going? And like, Mike always knew what was up. So I figured he knew what was up. But I knew he didn't know what was up when we were on one side of the street. And he's all, oh, there's a bus on the other side of the street. Let's get that bus. So now we're going the other way that I thought we were supposed to go. So we basically spent the whole afternoon driving around a bus trying to find the fruit bowl. And then we gave up and we're trying to get back and the buses aren't coming. Like, fucking, it's on a Sunday. And we're like, fuck, dude, we don't even know. Like, they don't know where we are. Fucking, there's no cell phones. Like, we're fucked. Like, and so we, the bus finally came and we got back like 15 minutes before, like, the park was going to, we were going to leave to come back home.
Mm.
Dude's like, I remember we come walking in and the chaperone dudes were all fucking trying to get all gnarly on us. Like, hey, you fucking guy. We're all, whatever, dude. And we fucking skated and then got yelled at on the way home on the bus. But like, that was the first like serious road trip. But like, we were getting after it. Like, there was pipes and like Arbuckle had pipes that they were putting under the ground. They were like 16 foot perfect pipes. And there was like fucking miles of them.
So where's we'd that?
Up there and Arbuckle's like, fuck, dude, like Central Valley kind of.
Oh, like out Highway 5?
But yeah, but we drove out there, me and Al Mercer, we took his dad's truck and we found like six of those pipes in one day. Just perfect, skated them and Patterson pipe. We were doing road trips all the time. But like Mike Fox, he took me on a fucking sick one. Him and Mark Odewalt, we drove down to LA and skated like Marina Del Rey and Sparks Goleta. We used to get down there with skated Lakewood, Vista, like we're getting around in the 70s, you know.
Was there the NorCal SoCal vibe back then?
There was kind of like this unwritten rivalry, but not really. Everyone got along, you know, when they skated together. But it was weird because NorCal was just pretty much unknown and didn't get any coverage barely in the early days of Skateboarder Magazine. It was all down south guys. But then I think when it changed is when the newer contest happened, when the first Hester series. So it was the first series that had vert skating, right? So there's Spring Valley, and then, fuck, I can't remember all the parks. Spring Valley, Hester, Newark, everyone came. Dogtown dudes, San Diego dudes, everyone's there. It was the first time that I got to see, like, all those dudes skate in person.
Oh.
That was before the road trips I took down south.
Was Stropel and Salba and those guys were there?
Everyone.
Okay.
Just all the heavy hitters, the best of the best. Like, it was a big contest.
And who was your guy? Like, who were you looking in the mags at and being like, that's my dude?
My three favorite dudes were T.A., Jay Adams, and Greg Weaver.
Huh.
And I always thought, like,
it's like a diverse crew.
Yeah, kind of. But I thought if you could mold those dudes together, you'd have the perfect skater. Like T.A. was a fucking sick style, fucking aggressive. Jay Adams was super innovative and fucking super aggressive. And then like Greg Weaver was like flow master. You know what I mean? Oh, man, if you could put all that together, that'd be fucking sick. So that's what I was trying to do, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, like I was really like Mike Fox was a huge influence and like he embedded it in me, like style's important, you know. Mm. Speed and style and power.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there weren't a lot of tricks back in the 70s, like in pools, you know, you're doing front side kick turns, backside kick turns, front side carves, backside carves. That's about it, you know. The tail tap was just kind of coming out, you know, so it was all focused on how fast you rode and how smooth and your style
and in control. And like, yeah, how did surfing help that?
Surfing was fuck, dude. Like, I think I was just meant to surf. I learned really fast. Like, it helped me with backyard pool skating because before I surfed, I was like, okay, you got to get to the top of every wall. That's skateboarding. Fucking don't, what's this shit? You got to get on the coping. And then surfing kind of taught me different lines. Like, you could hit this wall low to get the speed to get high on this wall. To hit this corner, like, it opened my mind for drawing lines because surfing, it's an open slate, you know. You surf the wave however you want to.
Mm.
that helped me with pool skating, actually, surfing.
What were some of the early pools you were skating? You mentioned like there was one in Los Gatos or something where you met KT.
That was the Vans pool. I actually went to the Vans pool, Mike Fox, but I didn't get to skate because the owner looked at me and said, "You're too little." And I'm like, "Dude, I'm going to bust tail taps in this looking thing. Like, just let me take one run and it'll be okay." And he just wouldn't let me skate. I was so pissed. Like, I just had to stand there and like, and watch these guys get like 3/4 of the way up. And I'm just like, fucking kidding me. But I think this is a story that Mike Fox told me recently. It's funny. KT, I think, was there because he lived like pretty much across the street. Oh. I know he lived in Willow Glen at this point, but he was there, and I didn't remember this, but Mike told me, and the guy, the owner, asked KT, like, "What do you think? Should I let these guys skate?" And then KT's all, "Nah, man, they can stay dry." So we got shut down. But I was like, the whole thing was frustrating. But that pool, I never actually got to skate. But we had a pool, the Swamp, that was our pool in our neighborhood that we skated every day. And there was a lot of pools, dude. It was during that drought.
Okay.
And we started going up to Los Altos, pipe and pool. Not the kiddie pool, but the Orange Bowl.
Right.
Almaden Valley had pools, like San Jose, like downtown. Like, we were getting around. Like, Mike drove, so he would always hit me up. "God, we got this new pool. Let's go." Like, he took me under his wing. So we skated a lot of pools.
What was your outlook on skating pools? Because, like, Salba seems like he wants to skate as many pools in one day as possible. Are you down for, like, trying to find as many pools as possible? Or are you looking for the best pool to skate and then go in there more repetitively and dialing it in?
You don't really know until you get there because you're on the search.
Mm.
Like, go to a pool. And it was funny because back then it was like you'd meet someone, you see someone with a skate on the bus or something. You wouldn't even say hi. You'd just be like, "Hey, got any pools?" Yeah. And then, like, you know, that's how you're introducing yourself. And then the dude's like, "Yeah, I got some pools." And so you're going to trade, right? And
wow.
So you're like, "Does this guy know what's up?" And you're trying to pawn off shitty pools and get good pools. It's like fucking playing blackjack or something. You know what I mean? And so sometimes you win, you know, but we would never give our good pools away, but we'd try to weasel. But that was a good way to get pools, you know, like people, there's a little underground network.
Right.
I don't know. Mike always knew what was up, dude.
Huh. Well, working at the skate shop, you're kind of the cool guy, right?
Yeah. And even before that, but he was older. He just knew what was up with everything. Like, I was just following Mike's lead completely. Like, what are we doing? What do we got? And so we just go start skating pools, and then the network grew, you know, and then you start meeting people, and like, a lot of those people we met got into the punk rock scene too. And then the parks opened, and then you knew them from the pool scene. Like, it was like a big family. It was fucking sick.
Mm. What's your like remembrance of Bombora? Cause that's so intriguing to me that it's like in our backyard, and I've actually gone there a few times and looked at it, and me and a couple of friends are like, could we dig it out if we just spent a year coming here every hour? Yeah. Like, you
it's
know, like,
I saw a photo. It's so high.
Fuck. I know it's fucked. But the neighborhood too. It's like, no neighbors are going to allow it.
They get kind of eggy when you're even in the 70s when you're there sometimes. But that pipe, I don't remember how we found out about it, but we took the bus there, and you pull in and you got to walk into the parking lot at Safeway, and then you go behind Safeway and you jump the fence and you get on like the reservoir trail.
Yeah.
And so you're walking and you can't see the pipe, and you're walking, and all of a sudden this fucking thing, you're just all done, like, whoa, fucking, it's huge. It's like 22 foot or something. And there was two pipes, right? There's the weird oval egg one, and then there's the round one. And the first day we went, we walked all the way through the fucking oval one, and we were skating the top of the pipe. That's where we thought everyone would skate.
Mm-hmm.
And then we came back, and everyone was sessioning the bottom because some sections were good, some were rough. It was built, I don't know if you remember, but it was built with like quarter pipes.
Mm. Like, so did it leak?
Some spots in the middle, like where it didn't get sun, mm-hmm. would leak. Like you'd have to like sometimes clean it, you know, but it wasn't bad. There was a drought. Like you, it wasn't bad. People like put rocks up there and dam it if it was coming down a little bit, like trickling, you know, but like there was like these, they're 3 foot wide quarter pipes that were put together to build the full pipe. So at vert, there was like a seam that was like a foot and a half of vert. So it was like a quarter pipe, foot and a half of vert, then over vert. And then the seams didn't line up. Like some of them were offset. So you had to aim. Like you couldn't just ride the pipe randomly. You had to go straight up and aim until the fucking quarter pipes were flush. Because if you hit that thing, you just fucking die.
Yeah.
So it was a gnarly pipe. And I remember going there and we were skating it, kind of skating it a lot. And all these spots, dude, Los Altos Pool and stuff, Uvis, wherever you go, you hear these stories. Did you see Blackheart skate this yet? You know, and you're just like, dude, I don't even know what the fucking guy looks like. And one day we went there and fucking Blackheart and maybe KT and Waldo Autry were there.
Mm.
Waldo Autry is like the pipe guy, you know, like baldy fucking. But we go there and fucking, I'm just like this little Groms, like, whoa, fucking finally. And dude, gnarliest skating to this day.
Like way higher than you'd seen.
Yeah, dude, because we go there and people be getting like right below the seam. And if you're getting a seam, you're fucking ripping.
Yeah. And
Blackheart fucking just starts faking and he's fucking faking over the seam. You're just going, whoa. And it's high, dude. The seam's like 11 foot, you know? Like, so you're a little kid. You're just going, holy shit. And he starts kick turning, dude. And he's just getting higher and higher. And there was these dots up there that were like probably like, they used to be probably holes where they poured or shot the fucking creed in and then clean them up. But there's these dots at like way up there, dude, like 10 o'clock and fucking Blackheart's like hitting the dots and shit. Like huge, so high. And then he'd come down fakie and do a 360s over vert and shit.
Oh, man.
Like real, like this, the first skating I saw in person that was at the level of the magazine guys.
Okay.
So far beyond what we all thought we were ripping, and then Blackheart came in and just fucking swept us out of the way, you know?
And was he a dick to you, or like, what was his attitude with you guys? Not even acknowledge you, or like, how did you guys find this pipe, or like, what was his deal?
Nah, dude, we didn't even exist.
Oh, okay.
Just like fucking didn't even want to speak. Just fucking like, dude, that's Platt. It's gotta be him, dude. Like,
uh-huh.
You know, they're drinking beers and shit, fucking like, yeah, but I didn't get to know him really until Winchester opened, and I became friends with KT before I did came friends with Blackheart. Like KT kind of took me under his wing and was hooking me up with tunnel wheels and decks and shit. Shirts, like, and then I remember though, KT introduced me to Blackheart at the bottom of the half pipe at Winchester, and this is a classic quote. I'm like, hey, what's up with that fucking, how's that ramp? And you know, they have that big ramp that was in Skateboard Magazine that he's skating.
Yeah.
And he just looks down at me and he's just all, what ramp? Skates away. I'm like, that was like my introduction. Like, fuck, nice meeting you. Yeah, he was heavy.
Did you skate the park in Coyote Point?
I don't think so. Where's okay. that?
It's like right before the San Francisco airport. There's like a big park there now and golf course. But oh, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I wrote it once. That's all it took.
I heard it was shitty, right?
It was so bad.
Yeah. Okay, that's it the one.
It had pools and stuff, but they were just so kinked and horrible. Like, it was kind of unskatable. And then they had a pipe that was made out of corrugated metal, and then they sheeted it with plywood. But that was all right. But, like, yeah, I went there once, and we're all fucking over it. Okay. There was too much good stuff to skate, you know?
And did you meet KT before Thrasher started or after?
Before.
Okay. So
I hanging out with those guys in the 70s.
Wow.
So I've skated good pools with those guys. I turned them on to this pool in Gilroy that I wasn't supposed to fucking, I was supposed to keep it under the lid, and I couldn't fucking hold out, dude. I told Mike Fox, and we would go there, and it was at a ranch in Gilroy, like a garlic ranch, onion ranch. And you had to skate on Sundays because the fucking farm was shut down.
Mm.
And then me and Mike started picking me up like before school. We'd crack it and we'd be down there like the crack of dawn. So we'd get out of there before 8, before they opened. So we were skating it a lot. And then I told KT about it because KT was hooking me up. Or he was kind of a mentor for me. Like he's the one that gave me my nickname, Meekster. It started spreading. Like once KT knew, then Blackheart knew, but I think Mike told Blackheart. I told KT, then the Buck brothers are there, then Schlafly's there, and it's turned in these sessions. And then those dudes started putting tunnel stickers up and shit. And we showed up one day and it was jackhammered. But to this day, it was the best pool I've ever skated. Like it was better than Winchester's Keyhole. Like wow. It was a perfect egg shape. And the sidewalk was the coping. So the coping was molded and poured. Oh. And so it was like 4 foot wide, like a path around the pool. And there was no stairs. And the pool, like, it was like 9 foot deep, 10 foot deep with killer trannies, like a foot of vert. And it was like they tilted it because there's no waterfall. It was just an angle. Mm. And the closer you got to the shallow end, the less vert it got. So the shallow end wasn't even vert. It was like a mini ramp, but a steep mini ramp, like almost vert.
Wow.
So that's where we learned to drop in.
Oh. Because
you couldn't get down there and push because there was no waterfall.
Mm.
I learned roll-ins at that pool, actually. But, we were skating all kinds of good pools. People had, like, their pools they'd hold on to, like, back to where we were talking about trade and shit, you know?
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Is there a story behind KT coming up with your nickname, or is it just typical KT throwing words around? He's like, Meekster.
Oh, KT, huh? He's got his own vernacular. I think he invented the NorCal vernacular, dude. So fucking rad. He'd just sit there and spit shit out, dude. And you just don't. And it is all rad. He actually, there was nothing behind it. Like, he would just make up words, you know? And, like, first he was calling me Keithage. Just like I'm just rolling with it, but then Meekster stuck. I think he called Scotty Scottage. Scott Foss.
Yeah.
Hey, Scottage. Like,
yeah.
Always had the fucking
and dirt. That kind of set the standard for the mag, I think. Like they had all these like the trash section. It has all these undercover names. Like if you're not in the know, you don't know who they're talking about and all that stuff.
It's like Talking Ed.
Yeah.
You know what that's all about? Like those dudes used to say, like it was like, "Oh, you're talking this." Like they'd be all, but KT be all talking vert, talking, you know. And so Talking Ed, you know what I mean? Like that's my perception of it. Like it's not like Talking Ed, like he's speaking. It's like you're talking editor. You know what I mean? Yeah, KT's personality was in that magazine, dude. His soul.
Yeah, and I always say that, like, when I was a kid, he was the dude that was coming, because we were in Palo Alto, we had a skate shop down there, and he would show up with the mag and just ask about your scene and be super cool, and, like, he was the first dude that I actually saw in the wild from the mag, and we always appreciated it so much, and just, like, his, like, kind of loose and just like fun attitude. That's what we, that was just everything. It was like, yeah, fun, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. They used to have raging parties at their house in Los Gatos on that ranch I was telling you about.
Mm.
You go there and just be this congregation of all skaters. Cause you know, you go to parties, it'd be like high school party jocks and shit.
Yeah.
But those parties were just 100% skateboarders, like super rad, super fun. And they held like, I think Steve held onto that property for a long time. Like he told me his parents even lived there for like 10 years.
Oh, really?
Out, his parents moved in. He was living somewhere else. Then he came back, moved there. But that shit's all gone now.
So talk about like the era where I guess Mike probably starts the band and you're like singing for Los Olvidados in the beginning, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did that all go down? Was there any band before that, or is that Mike Fox's first band too, or did they already dabble in it? Or
that I'm pretty sure that's Mike's first band.
Okay.
like, it's weird when I talk to Ray and then I talk to Mike and talk to Matt, and like, everyone's stories are a little different and timelines different, but Mike hit me up. I remember I was over the hill. I had to go to court for some shit I did, and I got dropped off in Palo Alto, and Mike's all, "We'll pick you up. There's a pool there." Like, so I just waited at this major intersection for them to show up, and we skated kiddie pool for the first time. Oh, and then that's when Mike was like, "Hey, we're starting a punk band and you're singing." I'm all right. Like, I was already into the whole scene and stuff. And so that was like Matt Etheridge on drums, Mike Fox on guitar, Mike Voss, the singer, was on the second guitar, Ray Stevens and me. I didn't even get a gig in. Like, we just practiced. We did a bunch of cover songs. We had like two original songs. And then I quit like after like six practices because I was living in Santa Cruz and I didn't drive. So I dropped off and we practice, and then I'd just be like stranded marinating in SJ with nothing to do for days, you know? So I kind of was like, "Oh man, I'm surfing and stuff. It's too hard to get over there." And then Mofo starts singing. So that was Lost All Be Daughters with Mofo. And then Mofo was out of it. And then Mike gave up. Mike Voss started singing. And then there was just one guitar with Mike Fox. But then there was Drunk Engines, which was the original Mofo Los Olvidados lineup. So
yeah, so that's so, like, there's so many crossovers. And I love this story. Mofo told me that Drunk Engines kind of started because he started working at the mag and he was getting shit. Like, you got to work for us. You can't be in a band. You have to be a photographer. Not. And so they thought, okay, we'll put masks on and no one will know it's us.
Oh, that's awesome. I never knew that. Hiding in plain sight.
That's so crazy. Cool. I mean, just like total, like, we're not going to give up, you know?
Yeah. Like, you can't. Can't tell me what to do on my fucking free time. What? You
know? And when I talked to those guys, I was like, "What's a good question for Keith?" Like, I asked a bunch of different dudes that knew you. The one question that was in common was, "What's the story about Jackie O?"
No shit. That's the question. That's all Mike Fox, dude. Like, I heard Ray Stevens' version of it. Mike's all, "I got this song." And so that was like our version of 1-2-XU. And it had the little little slow part, you know, and it's all. And dude, there was like seven words in the whole song. Like, "Jackie O on the go, Jackie O on the go." And the guitar comes in, it's all, "Jet set, jet set." And that was it, over and over and over again, dude.
Okay. What were some of the clubs that, like, San Jose, were you going to San Jose more or San Francisco more or both? Or
no, like, by that time I was living in Santa Cruz.
Oh.
There was a couple little clubs, like some guy had a warehouse in Harvey West and he had punk shows there, like Circle Jerks played there and Black Flag, and it was just a warehouse. And then there was like the art center, the Santa Cruz Art Center. It's still there, but in the back there's like a small like theater setup. It had like seats, you know, for plays or something, and like the capacity was like 37 people or something. And this guy Henry Hampel was having shows there, like MAD would play and Young Alcoholics, and DOA actually played there.
Oh, sick.
It was like a lot of parties and stuff, but like San Jose shows, I would go to them, but it was more about the city, because the city was so rich. That scene was just, it was insane. Like, all the top bands were going through the city, you know, when they were on tour.
And Dead Kennedys are from the city.
God, there's so many bands from the city. They had such their own scene.
They had their own, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then the LA bands and bands from all over would go there, you know, but.
So besides that Geary spot you were talking about, what other, do you remember other venues early on in the city?
So there was the MAB.
Right.
And then on Broadway, right above it. And then there was the Tool and Die, Sound of Music, Deaf Club, Elite Club, 10th Street Hall, the Temple Beautiful, what they called it. You know, the People's Temple was the Temple Beautiful.
Yeah.
That was mainly what was going on, like, in the early 80s, like from 79. Well, I mean, Def Club was early. Like, they were probably having shows there in 77 and stuff. I never went to the Def Club, but that was like up until like 82. That's kind of when I wasn't going to shows as much. Like, it kind of got popular. And it used to feel like when you'd go to a show, you'd know like half the people there, and like it was like a family. And then it just got bigger and bigger. And
Then I showed up.
Going in a circle and calling it the pit. And fucking, like, it used to just be chaos, you know? And then all of a sudden it's a circle and we're like, well, what the fuck's this? You know?
Yeah.
Like, and then there was the people before us, like, you know, Tim Lockfeld and Chris and Anthony Fisher from a lot of Flex, and those guys, like Tommy and Tony, like, those guys saw some early shit. Like in 1980, 81, I was going to a lot of shows up there. But after that, I kind of got more into other things.
Mm-hmm. You just, like, you started surfing more. You're living in Santa Cruz, right?
Yeah, I started surfing like 1980, and I got really into it. Like, I surfed a lot. Like, I surfed more than I skated when I was pro skater. Like, I was into it. Like, I was sponsored and stuff.
Rad. What's the Santa Cruz vibe has always seemed pretty, like, I guess surfing in general is territorial, but Santa Cruz always seemed more so like, if you're not from here, like, I don't know the spots, but let's just say Pleasure Point, like, don't show up here, like Steamer's Lane, you're out of here, like, you're west side, east side.
Kind of regulators and stuff, you know, but it was like that back then, like, all the spots, you know, like, it was controlled. And there was rules, and like, people would come in from the outside and not know the rules or the pecking order.
Right.
And it'd fuck everything up, and they'd get hassled. And, you know, like, some spots were like fucking hard to surf, dangerous, you know, and you got guys just paddling out there and like, nah, man, you got to get out of here. But now it's a free for all. It's just done. You know, but yeah, there was a vibe, definitely. And it's even like the whole town kind of had a vibe because it's a tourist place. It's small. And then, like, a lot of tourists would come to the beach and just leave their trash and just kind of fuck up the community for the day. And leave. And then the locals are ending up cleaning everything up. And so there's, like, animosity building before I was even around there, for sure. Like, when I first moved there, like, dude, I wasn't allowed to surf spots. I had to fucking work my way up for years, you know, and earn respect, give respect.
Yeah.
And that kind of... that whole, like, deal's gone now. It's blown out. You got money, you're buying a house on Pleasure Point, and you're the guy. You know what I mean? It's pretty bad.
Right.
And it's crowded. It's so fucking crowded.
Yeah. You don't want to go on weekends for sure, right?
It just seems like it's always crowded. Like, I don't know if anyone works anymore.
Yeah, I always trip on that, because to be a good surfer, you have to surf all the time. Like, it ain't easy. Like, it's, you got to, like, get out there. And so I'm like, where do these guys get all these hours?
Totally. It used to be more like schedule out, like, okay, all the kids are in school, so it's uncrowded before school gets out. And then all the dudes working, they don't get out till 5. So it used to be pretty uncrowded if you could work it, you know, like, not have a job and survive. But that's a lot different now.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Thrasher. What do you remember, like, as the origin story and stuff? Like, what do you remember? Like, were you in hearing any discussions before it came out? And, like, what were the reactions as it does come out? Like, that kind of, I guess, 1981, right? January.
Yeah, I remember hearing stuff, like rumors, you know, because I think at that point KT had moved to San Francisco, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we went up to the First Mile High Ramp.
Oh, Tahoe.
Very first one, and Chantry was there. We went up there and stayed at Mike Chantry's house with Caton, and Caton invited us up, and me and Scott Foss, and I don't know. That's where we met Tony Hospital, and fuck, I forgot what I was fucking talking about. Oh, yeah. Someone mentioned Thrasher was in the making, right? I think it was Terrebonne. Like, I think he knew what was going on. He's like, yeah, magazine's going to start. It's called Thrasher. And I remember writing on the side of the ramp, you'll all become Thrashers or be thrashed or something like that. And that was, like, the first time I started hearing stuff. And I remember being at NHS telling Novak, too, like, dude, we need a magazine. There's no magazine. you know, and that, you know, they were probably already building that whole idea, you know? That's the first stuff I heard is like with that Tahoe trip. It's the first time I heard mention of like Thrasher, the word, you know?
So you were with NHS before Thrasher started?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I started skating for Santa Cruz before Dwayne, before Salba. Like,
oh,
only original guy on there before me that kept going was Olsen.
Olsen, yeah.
I got, they actually asked me to skate for him, I think in 77, and I said no. And fucking, I don't know why. And then I got on in 78.
78. And before that, were you on Astral for a bit?
Yeah, how'd you know that? Like, that's crazy.
This guy did his research.
So that's why I said no the first time. Is I was riding for Astral, and this guy, John Krissick, had something to do with the team. And he saw me skating. I was riding this longboard with a broken arm. I had just broken my arm. And so I was just cruising. He's all, so, hey, no way, man. Who's that guy? And I'm like, kind of looking at him like, dude, I'm not even doing anything. What are you talking about? And fucking, I remember him saying, like, he was talking to someone. Someone's all, that's fucking Meekster. And like, he didn't even know I rode vert and shit. And he's all, is he as good as Cheeto? It's just, Little Martino is Jim Martino's little brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, he better Marchito. And they're all, and the guy just goes, hey, you want to skate for Santa Cruz? And I thought, I was riding for Astro, and I thought it was kind of weird. I'm all, dude, you haven't even seen me skate. I'm like fucking broken arm, just rolling around. Like, it's weird. So I just said, no. I thought it'd be cool to say no. Fucking stupid, you know? But I ended up, after Astro, I skated for Hout for like 2 weeks and then got on Santa Cruz. So it happened anyway, like 6 months later.
And so NHS is, it's Novak, Hout, and Sherman, right?
Right, right.
And so did you know that Sherman, he passed? Yeah, I knew
Sherman was still around when I first started skate for him.
Oh.
Yeah.
And what were those guys like? Were they like Novak or were they a different breed? Like
Sherman was gnarly, dude. Like, he's like a big dude, fit, like kind of a no-nonsense kind of. I was kind of intimidated by him. I didn't really speak to him much, you know? And he passed away pretty quick after that. So I didn't really get to know him. And then Novak's like, you know, Novak.
Yeah.
Fucking Novak's Novak, right?
Yeah.
Old school surfer. He's got great stories. And I mean, yeah. I've known Novak since I was probably like 14 or something.
Uh-huh.
And so I ended up working for NHS in 1980. Like I started skating for him in 78, started working for him in 80. And so I got to know those dudes really, like Novak, like really well. And we got along good, like surf and stuff. And how, I don't know how very well, but he's just a fucking legend. Surfboard shaper, surfer. He's
okay.
Still skating surfboards, still surfing. Like he's legendary, old school Santa Cruz surfer.
Okay.
So there's like a lot of culture in that NHS name.
Mm-hmm. When you're talking about the mag to Novak, does he kind of hint like we got something going, or are you talk like, how do you find out about it? Is it through KT or?
When we went to the Mile High ramp, I heard it. And then I can't remember, like must've got the first issues from KT.
Mm.
Like you said, he'd show up places and he'd pass out the mag.
Yeah.
But I remember like, it was cool. Cause it was like the way KT did it, it made us feel like it was our magazine.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because we were always like Skateboarder Magazine, Skateboard World. It was so like Southern California fucking driven. It, this felt like, oh, we have our own mag. These are our bros that were putting this together. We've known these guys for years already. Like they didn't just depend on the fucking California scene. They were always bringing in articles from all over the country and, you know, people you never heard of. Like, you're starting to see a bigger world skateboarding, or Skateboard Magazine was just fucking, I don't know, kind of constrained, you know?
Okay. Yeah, it was interesting when I talked to Brian Brandon, he was talking about like submitting, and I think like Tim Kerr, like Texas had a scene, and it was all funneling into Thrasher, and they were getting these things from different scenes, which was really cool.
Florida, East Coast, like it wasn't just... I don't know. It was getting kind of fucking stale, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Same dudes, every fucking Skateboarder magazine cover, same dude on the cover every time, same dudes in the articles. Like,
right.
it's cool. Those dudes rip and everything. I'm not giving shit, but it was like, it was just, it's like, fuck, dude, there's a big world out there.
Yeah.
And let's see that. But that's what Thrasher kind of felt like, you know, it's our guys that built this and there's some pride there, some NorCal pride.
Do you remember meeting Fausto for the first time?
Yeah, I met Fausto early, but like, I wasn't one of Fausto's guys. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, you know how he takes guys under his wing? I wasn't one of those dudes.
Mm.
I remember Brian Buck gave me my first set of indie trucks, experimental fucking 109s. Like, and Fausto, I'm all, Fausto, I don't, because I kept asking him for trucks, you know? He'd give me shirts and shit or whatever, but I wouldn't get the trucks. And I'm all, I don't need your trucks. I got these. And he's all, whoa, you can't have those. Took them from me. And I'm like, wait, now I don't have any trucks. And I fucking, like, where's my trucks? I mean, you didn't even trade. You just took the ones I finally had in my hand. I liked Fausto. Fausto was fucking classic, dude. No nonsense. I liked him.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I never worked for him or anything, but he knew I worked for Novak. And he'd always be like, you still working for Rich? And we'd have those conversations. And he was always around, like at the contests and stuff.
Were you at Joe Lopes' ramp contest?
No, but I skated Lopes' ramp before the contest. Like, okay. Roscoe first moved to town.
Mm.
And so when he moved to Santa Cruz, he rented a room for my mom.
Oh.
So I was kind of getting reconnected because I was just full surf, not going to the skate park anymore, like living a completely different life. Like, we went back to the streets. Like, it got raw again. Skating. Okay. Pitches, like skating all the way to the skate spot, skating to another skate spot, skating like on the skate 24 hours a day, pretty much, you know?
Yeah.
As the skate park thing was like, okay, take the bus to the skate park. I keep my shit there, skate, leave. And then you go back to the normal world. You know what I mean? Like, but Santa Cruz is like fucking awesome, dude. Like skating, parties, going to the beach, surfing. And the whole skate thing was accepted.
Mm.
Like San Jose, it was like, no one gave a shit about skateboarding. But then when I moved to Santa Cruz and I'm meeting my friends, parents and shit. And they're all, oh yeah, we heard you rip at skating. They're like talking the same fucking language and stuff. What? Oh yeah, I heard you fucking do good backside airs and shit. Like, you're just all, what the fuck? This is sick. Like, you guys know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like every day was an adventure, you know, and then the punk rock thing happened and Blast Dudes moved to Santa Cruz and started building this little scene. It was fun.
And when you were working for NHS, that's when the Slasher comes out, right?
Yeah, that came out in like 85.
And did that originate from like a show or something?
I heard it was
on a flyer or something.
Do that for a surf contest flyer.
Right. Oh, surf and contest.
Surf dudes were like, it's too gnarly. Like, tone it down. And so they didn't use it. And so that sat on the shelves for years, a couple of years. And then I was running the production area at NHS, like doing all the silk screening. And I had Friel under me and Mike Nider was working for me and all that.
Wow. Friel was there then?
I hired Friel.
No way.
I hired Nider.
Wow.
So I worked directly for Tim Piamarta.
Okay.
That's how I got in that whole thing. I learned a lot from that guy, you know, like there's a lot of wearing a lot of hats at NHS over the years. But what are we talking about? Here we go again.
The Slasher board.
Oh, yeah. So we had moved from 41st Avenue to Soquel after it was growing. And Olson was doing his SOS stuff. And so we had a meeting with me, Novak, Tim Piamarta, Olson, and Phillips. And Phillips brought the Slasher graphic to actually show Olson. And he modified it, put like a fucking pompadour on it, full greaser looking. It was sick. Like, that was the first time I ever saw it. I was like, whoa, that thing's insane. And Olson just didn't like it.
Huh. No so, checkerboard.
I don't want to do that. And then right then, Tim's all, we're doing this with something. And I was already writing, I was cutting out my own shape to skate, like on the bandsaw. Every skate I had, I'd write my own shape. He's all, we're going to use your shape and put this graphic on it. And I'm like, he's all, well, you'll get like 50 cents a board. I'm all, fuck, cool, all right. But I was still working there, doing the screening thing. And then they got the films and they were putting the films on an actual cutout shape, see how it fits. And Novak comes in and Tim's explaining to him, like, yeah, we're going to, you know, use mixer shape, give him 50 cents a board, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Novak's like, dude, let's just put his name on it and give him a buck a board. And I'm just like, fuck, this is getting better and better, you know, like, and that's kind of a weird way of how that came about.
So your name was on the original one?
Huh?
Your name was on the original? I thought maybe it was like Slasher and then your name was on the next round.
Slasher and then my name was always Tiny somewhere.
Oh.
Which was kind of a weird little Tim Piamarta fucking, I think maybe I got his model or I don't fucking know. But it was a weird little suppression deal that was going on there for years.
Okay.
But it's all good, you know, but that's how it came together. So it was kind of weird. Like I didn't like go up the amateur ranks and I was more like a, I don't know, I could skate really good. Like I was fucking, I was going to turn pro at the first Winchester contest, how it was going to pay my entry fee. And I fucking shined it. I got all nervous or whatever. So I was at that level in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And this didn't happen until the mid 80s. So it was almost like I got sat on for a while, you know? And then like by that time, dude, I'm surfing, got girls, drinking beers, like wasn't that into it. Like, you know, like if I would, that would have happened earlier, I would have been more focused.
Uh-huh. Were you guys partying pretty hard back then?
Yeah, dude. I think I started smoking pot when I was 10, 11,
yeah.
And then started drinking when I was 13, like just in it deep.
I tried pot.
I've been sober for over 10 years now, which God, I wish I'd done that like 20 years ago.
I know. I just hit 8 years.
Oh, sick. Right on.
Yeah.
Feels good, huh?
So good.
I owe you an amends for this, buddy.
Like, yeah. I always tell people, they're like, what? How? What? You know, and I'm like, I don't miss hangovers. There's no regrets at all. But like when I hit like 40, the hangovers were just anxiety attacks. And I couldn't deal with it. I was just like, dude, something happened. I don't know what happened. But it, maybe it's just me getting older, but like, I can't handle this anymore. Like,
because
we would drink all night and then go to work the next day and it would be totally doable.
Yeah.
Then one day it wasn't.
Oh, shit. I used to have crazy delayed ones. Like, I'd be hungover for like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Couldn't get out of bed, headaches,
just
nausea. I was poisoning myself.
Too, I can't imagine fucking social media because we did a lot of dumb shit, you know. But now everybody has phones. Like, if everyone had phones when we were doing shit, there'd be video and photos of some shitty shit that, like, you know, it's like I was just wasted, I blacked out, I don't know. And then
not my fault.
Yeah,
I wasn't there, but it was me.
Yeah, someone stole my body
and my mind. What's going on? Yeah. No, I, dude, it's just crazy shit.
Blood Wizards. Blood Wizards. Blood Wizards. Blood Wizards! Shop.bloodwizard.com.
Tickety tack.
Hey, it's Corey at Blue Plate, 3218 Mission Street. Come see us. Meatloaf, fried chicken, deviled eggs, Dollar Olympia beers. We're here every day of the week. We got a garden and we got smiles on our faces. Come let us make you happy.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talking Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow. All of the episodes will always remain free, but if you would like to help support the show, you can do so at talkingschmidt.com, where you can pick up some merchandise like t-shirts, beanies, hats, and stickers. The website has an entire archive of all of the episodes, with extra photos and videos. Email us with any suggestions, comments, or ways that the show may have improved your life at talkingschmidt@gmail.com. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature. A very special shout out goes to the executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout out.
Love it!
This is Talking Schmidt. where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.
Keep the wheels greased.